Well, the face rings a bell, so we'll see. It is a blessing to be here and a particular privilege to be able to stand in this pulpit and open God's Word. The only guideline we have for life is found in this book. And what a privilege to study that. I want to speak this morning on a topic of anger. We don't often deal with that. Being a men's weekend, anger is one of the issues I've dealt with in life. My whole mode of operation, being raised in an unsaved setting, we would swing first and then we would talk the issue through later. And that was just kind of an unfortunate pattern that God had to begin working out of me through circumstance that I lived in the woods, and then when I went to college, I actually lived with human beings in a dorm, and that was quite an adjustment for me for a year. And I had a chip on my shoulder about city slickers, and man, there were a dorm full of them, and I had my hands full counseling, and but God had to teach me some lessons early on. And so I want to take Moses. What a man. What a leader. Unbelievable. A man who was in line to be the next Pharaoh chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. And he knew what choice he was making. And he appears in Hebrews chapter 11. And what a model he set for men. How do we study, analyze? How do we choose? What do we do? How do we set value systems? But yet in the midst of Moses' journey, in spite of the fact that he was a man of great honor, anger was a situation that he really didn't get a handle on. And we see it popping up at age 40. He ended up going out in the backside of the desert for 40 years. We see it. He left Pharaoh's presence in extreme anger. And we find a circumstance here in Numbers chapter 20, which is going to be our text this morning. And on this topic of anger, Duke Medical Research School has a lot of information on anger. There are a lot of information. Dr. Chuck Phelps has done good research. I borrowed material from these sources. But I thought over the last several years when my wife and I have been doing conferences, probably the last 8 years, we have done topics on bitterness and anger. And it's unbelievable what is coming to the surface in the hearts of people sitting faithfully in church. And it can be a tremendous hindrance. So I want to take a man, a real man, a real life, really abandoned to God. But yet, how did he handle these situations? Numbers chapter 20, then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month. And the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. We'll look first of all at the cause of anger. Number one is personal pain. Normally people who are seething with anger are suffering with some type of personal pain. Either a childhood situation, early abuse, an abusive father, absent father, a circumstance that causes great deal of misery, the loss of a loved one early in life. And in this case, Moses was going through and Miriam dies. Who was Miriam? And what role did Miriam play in the life of Moses? I mean, right from the very beginning, I spoke on Noah's Ark first. Now I talk about Moses' Ark. And both saved by water. But it was Miriam who oversaw the protection of her little brother and got him in a situation where he was actually put in line to be a son of Pharaoh, to be in line to be the next Pharaoh. And so, and then Miriam, of course, later on, typical older sister, criticizing who Moses was dating. You remember that circumstance that caused such a great big stir and stopped the movement of God's people for a while. But then suddenly, big sister is gone. You know, ever lose a loved one unexpectedly? Someone who, you know, you thought would always be around. And it caused pain. Or maybe there's some other kind of hurt that has caused pain. Maybe a personal rejection, whatever that might be. I was doing a men's conference up in the Teton Mountains at a camp. And a man came and said, he owned a construction company. He said, I paid for one of my men to come to the thing. The man is not saved. He is rough as a corn cob. And but he needs the Lord. And he said, while you're teaching, be aware that he is here and he is not saved. And there were about 100 men in that camp. It was a snowmobile retreat. We had the snowmobile up to the camp. And so I did a message on anger. And the guy who owned the construction company came. He said, have you gotten a chance to talk to my man yet? And I said, well, no. He said, last time he spoke, I saw him writing a lot of notes. I think he wants to talk to you. So he didn't come to talk to me. So before my last session, I slid a chair up to him. He sat always against the back wall in that little chapel. And I said, you know, I'm glad you're here. I'm sure glad that you can. It's an honor for me to speak to you. And I said, I heard you might want to talk to me. He said, I do, but I don't want to offend you. He said, I disagree with your whole premise. He said, last night you opened and said, we are sinners. He said, no, God is a sinner. And I said, Bill, I said, I'm not offended at that. I don't believe God is offended at that. But there's something gnawing at you. And he shoves this in my face. He said, put that in your anger file. And I have an anger file, I told him. And he handed me this sheet. Full of personal pain. He said, Dr. Les, for your anger file, what do you say to a man that watched his mother suffer from a 40-foot fall? I was 5 years old. Watched his father die from a brain tumor. I was 7 years old. Watched his sister become a heroin addict. I was 10 years old. Saw his puppy get hit by a car. I was 13 years old. Who prayed that I would never see my grandmother suffer, and I walked in when the paramedics were doing CPR. She died. And who thinks God is a sinner. And there's more. Who prayed that his mom would not suffer and take her years before he did not. She suffered, and I suffered watching her suffer. Whose nephew died at 30 years old, and there is still more. He says, Bill, and puts his last name. Personal pain. Well, you know, there are a lot of people sitting in church hurting. They come every Sunday wanting so desperately to believe the Bible and wanting so desperately to believe that God is love, but somehow it has not connected in the heart to where they can rest in Him and settle in Him and just say, God, you are faithful and you are so good, and God, you're going to work this for your good. I don't know what your particular personal pain is. Every time there's a mass shooting, my first words I tell my wife, rejection, rejection, rejection. And I said, I don't know who along the road, I don't know where someone could have intersected those lives. I don't know who could have shown the perfect love of Christ. I don't know who could have put the acceptance they were so desperately wanting and the anger at God that finally boiled over to such a point. But yet we are in one church, and I have this lady's 3-page handwritten letter in file. And God did a breaking in her heart. She was the organist and pianist in the church, faithful. My wife and I had been in that church a few times, faithful. And I preached on another message one night, and I was preaching then this on, I was not finished. And she came out of her seat, got her knees at the altar, and weeping. And I met her that Sunday night. I said, I don't know what you're wrestling with, but God is faithful and God cares. Monday night, she handed me a 3-page handwritten letter. She said, God devastated me last night because I had been sitting angry at God for years. And she said, I'm wondering why. And she said, why we could not have children. It's hard for me to come to church and see families sitting with children when my husband and I have tried and tried and tried and tried so hard. I could go illustration after illustration. But yet she said, nobody in our church would ever have a hint I'm wrestling with this in my soul. But then the next night she came, and there was such a release in her spirit because she had gone and asked her husband's forgiveness. She said, I work. She was a writer for one of the big newspapers. She said, I show my anger there at work. She said, I try to make everybody miserable. I growl at my husband over the tiniest things. And she said, I finally came to realize I was angry at God. Personal pain that was being born in that. And then secondly, there's people pressure. And there was no water, verse 2, for the congregation. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people chode with Moses. Many of you who are managers and bosses where you work, you know there is such a thing as people pressure. People business is dirty business. And there's always somebody that is trying to get something stirred with you. And I've known people who would make coffee nervous. And some of you would too. Give an aspirin a headache. Now keep in mind, here's Moses. God called him to lead the children from Egypt, where they did not want to leave, to Canaan, where they had no interest in going. How many? It wasn't like a little Sunday school picnic. 600,000 fighting men, which meant there were probably 600,000 fighting women, and maybe 3 million screaming kids. So this was a massive movement here. And chode doesn't mean they got him to the side and said, Moses, could we share something private? They were screaming at him. And here's Moses. And I've often said, using a play on words, they gave him such a headache, God had to give him 2 tablets. And only man who ever broke all 10 commandments at once. But what was it? People, 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 and they were descending on him and pressuring him. And sometimes it's very, very hard to deal with the people pressures that that we have to deal with. And Moses worked in that situation. Then we find, what is the countenance of anger? What does it look like? Well, it starts with sarcastic words. Isn't it interesting, when we're boiling with something, the first thing that spurts is sarcastic. What's the root of the word sarcastic? It's cutting. Flesh cutting. The whole word sarks, where it's talking about the flesh, it's very cutting words. And the problem is, who are we most often going to use cut with? Against whom will we most often use cutting words? People we know best and love most. And it'll spurt. You know, when your wife is worn out and she's at home trying to take care of 3 kids, and you have slaved at work, you got there at 8 and struggled till 8:30 with the first coffee break. And then you have slaved up until noon and had an hour and a half lunch, and then you've had to fight traffic getting home. And the house is all topsy-turvy. And in wisdom and love, you say, honey, do you have trouble organizing your time? That is not necessarily what she needs to hear at that point. Or a child does something, and my wife used to always want, get the facts. Get the facts. And so, how quickly does the word idiot come out? How quickly does you dumbhead, or how quickly we use character assassinations rather than words that are carefully chosen? Words can slice and cut, and you know, sometimes they don't recover from these words. A word can be stated and it can be very, very slicing to the soul. And so there's sarcastic words that come, and then we get self-centered focus. Now let's look here in verse 7. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the rod, gather thou and the people together, and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes. And it shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth them water out of the rock. So thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts drink. So God says, Moses, now speak to the rock. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now ye rebels. That isn't what God told him to do. But he takes words and cuts at their character. Must we fetch you water out of this rock? All of a sudden, what's this? What do you mean, we? Since when did Moses get water out of a rock? What did he do? Turn to a self-centered focus. Because Moses was making himself the issue, that rejecting me. And I am not being critical of Moses. All I'm doing is saying what the text says. Because if I had been Moses, I would have never gotten that far. Never. With these people. I said, okay, you like garlic? Go. And I'm going to take whoever wants to go to Canaan. Now come with me, the rest of you, keep your mouth closed and go home. Go get your garlic. Lose all your friends. Well, what did Moses do? Must we? How quickly do we make ourselves the issue? Sometimes we get angry because we have been inconvenienced personally. Our daughter Tammy, who'd never given us a moment's trouble. She was senior in high school. She drove a van load of kids to Faith Christian School. She used our van, picked up kids on campus, drove them in. I got up early one morning, walked over to the dining hall. I noticed that it had misted and frozen, and then it snowed on top of that. So there was a thin layer of ice under a thin layer of snow. And it looked very deceptive. So I told Tammy, I said, please be careful because that road is very icy. And she said, I'll be careful. But she was blonde. And straight A blonde. But that doesn't mean mechanics go along with that straight A. That's not cutting words, is that? I better be careful here. And so we had 250 guests on campus for a basketball invitational, so we moved everything up to get the gym cleared after chapel. So we moved our chapel to 9 o'clock. And so I had to speak at 9. So my morning was kind of changed. And so I'm in the shower, and my son Stephen comes running back with his book bag on his back and comes down and said, Dad, we're in the ditch. I said, where? He said, up around the corner. I said, I'll go and get the Bronco. He said, Dad, not the Bronco. We are in the ditch. So I said, well, I'll get the payloader. So I went and got logging chain. I got the payloader from the shop, put the logging chain in the bucket, and I went out the front. And sure enough, there was the van very skillfully worked in amongst some trees there on the side of the road. And I'm starting to do a slow burn. I'm thinking, brain dead. I said, I don't think I stuttered when I said, no, I had Pastor Reed Nelson with their kid, used to be in our youth group, who had a group there. And I said, Reed, come on with me to drive the van back. And he's watching me. And I said, Reed, I mean, could you see this was icy or not? He was just listening. And I said, well, I'm going to hook the, I hooked the chain onto the Reese hitch, and I lifted the back end of the van up. I was going to pull it out like a wheelbarrow, just kind of work it out, taking the bucket back and forth. Well, there was a popple tree about that big that hindered that. So I said, Reed, go back and get my chainsaw from the house. Don't get the one from the shop. Well, he brought the one from the shop, a McCullough. And that thing was old enough to vote. And so I started and got halfway through that little tree and it quit. And now I'm really worried. I said, of all the brain dead things I'm going to mess with now. And I said, this is absolutely stupid. And Reed's watching me. And no, why was I upset? I'll tell you why. Because within 30 minutes, I had to be preaching to teenagers of how to be under the control of the Spirit in their lives. That's why I was upset. Yeah, right. Right. Must we? Are you going to use your activities to inconvenience we? That's the issue. Or, lest you should have better devotion. Devotions was not the issue. Let me show you. It wasn't with Moses. Either look in verse 6. And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. That was that morning. Have you ever had a better God night time than that? If you have, talk to me later, because I'd like to know what all happened there. It wasn't that Moses hadn't had his private time with God. It was he got in the circumstance, and he let himself become the issue. And so I got the payloader home, redrove the van home. By the way, the left tire was blown, so I had to change that too. I got home, I'm sweating. I had my snowmobile suit on and I call them my Uper wingtips, or Sorel boots. And I went in the kitchen. My wife was in. I said, honey, did you hear me tell Tammy it was icy? Yes. I said, did I stutter? She said, settle down. And she said two very convicting things. She said, you better thank God the only problem Tammy ever caused us you can pull out with a loader. And number two, are you going to create a problem where there isn't one? And I went on my knees in Tammy's room and I wrote her a love note. Tammy never knew how I felt, although I think she was already thinking where she could live the rest of her senior year. I'm sure that would go through her mind. I think maybe Smith would have me live over there. And I was preaching at Bob Jones University in Bible conference. I used this illustration and Tammy was there. That's the first she knew what I had felt almost a year earlier. But I think she had a hint, though, because they were already gone. But it was very, very convicting and very revealing to me, because the hypocrisy that God showed to me. Because the very next day, one of our faculty ladies had slid off the road. And I was by the coffee pot in the dining hall, and she was crying. I said, what's wrong? She said, I slid off the road. I said, that can happen to anybody. That's no big deal. And I said, I'll get it out. Don't worry about that. No. What if I had said, you what, you idiot? Can't you see ice? And she went to the teacher lounge and said, boy, Doc Gold blew it. Man, he was ripped. No, because my reputation is affected there. My character was revealed at home. That's convicting to me. Because, yeah, I could be pious with a teacher, because I don't want her going back to the teacher's lounge and say, man, he almost gave me a hair shaking. No, I was very, I mean, you would not find a more understanding person than Doc. Oh, yeah, right. Self-centered. And then, I know none of you have neighbors like that. I know none of you are that way. And then striking physically. And Moses lifted his hand and he smote the rock twice. Unfortunately, sometimes anger comes into a physical. You see how much abuse is going on in society. It is heartbreaking. Those of you who worked in the medical field, in the emergency field, and in police work, and in prison work, you've seen this. It is getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And we see the sad statistics on that. Now, what was the calamity of anger in the text? First of all, it was a diversion from God's plan. Look in verse 8. God says, speak to the rock. But what did they do? He smote the rock twice. That's disobedience. He said, well, it's that big of a deal. They got water, didn't they? Good example, the end doesn't justify the means. Great example of that. Secondly, it marred God's picture. And we see, would someone read 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 4, someone with a good booming voice, or even one of you men, if you can find it faster. 1 Corinthians 10:4. Someone read that for us, if you would. Okay, here's the Israelites going through the wilderness. What three things traveled with them? By day, a cloud. By night, a pillar of fire. And the third thing was the rock. Now read that verse one more time and listen. 1 Corinthians 10:4. Listen carefully. The cloud, the fire, and the third thing. Listen. The rock was Christ. What was so serious about Moses smiting the rock? Because the picture is Christ was smitten once for all. And that it was very careful because the rock that followed them was Christ. He was the provider of the water. He was the provider of life. He was the provider of manna that came along. And Moses, in careless anger, willfully disobeyed the command out of anger, smote the rock twice, destroying the picture that God had that was coming yet to Calvary, that according to Hebrews, once for all. He's not sacrificed and smitten every Sunday. It is once for all. And you add to the seriousness of that, and then it was denied God's prize. Verse 12, and the Lord spake to Moses and Aaron, because you believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them. And so we see there was a denial of the prize. God said, Moses, after all he went through, you cannot go in with the people. Of course, we know later Moses was there during the Mount of Transfiguration. He made it in. But the purpose for which he had given his life, God would not allow him to go in. They let him go on the mountain, look over, but you couldn't go in with the people. And you ask yourself, I ask myself, what prizes have been lost because of out of control anger? There is a rightful anger. That's not what I'm speaking of now. A relationship with a child. A dentist talked to me after a morning service where I was in Lower Wisconsin. He came to me after service. I preached on a completely different topic, and he says, I've lost total communication with my son. He said, I want him to be so perfect. And he said, I'd always hammer at him to, because I didn't want him doing things that would mar my reputation. And he said, he left home. I have no communication with him. He said, do you think, now this is a dentist with a very successful practice. He said, do you think if I took my own life, my son, and God would know how sorry I am? I said, you're talking very foolishly and very satanic right now. I said, you need to get time off, and I want you to come up to our place. And we just need to talk and drive and pray. So he took time off. He came up to our place, and he and I just spent time dealing with his pride, dealing with the breaking that God was bringing in him, because all of us have to be broken one way or another for ultimate usability. But instantly, we're going to prove how sorry I am, so I'll take my own life. What ultimate act of selfishness to make somebody else suffer to prove how broken you are. Very, very crazy thinking. Denial of God's price. What has it cost us? Now, what's the cure for anger? Face it. There, normally, what we do... Upon confrontation, the Spirit of God convicts. Number one, we repress. We lie to ourselves. I'm okay. We repress. Second thing, we suppress. There's repression and there's suppression. Suppression is me lying to you. Les, are you okay? I'm fine. Then there's expression. This is what Moses did. It bubbles out externally. You know, before television, the most exciting thing used to happen was annual church business meetings. Because there was old Farmer Jake. He was waiting to say his piece. All the kids would sit in the back. And then during the business meeting, okay, you hear something from the floor, and then you'd see him slowly write, yes, it's going to happen again, yes. And so I'll tell you what. These lazy preachers and so on, and the waste of money that's going on around here. So that's expression. Seething, seething, pss, pss, seething, pss, pss. And then suddenly the explosion that takes place. What's the best, what's God's plan? Confession. It's not repression, it's not suppression, it's not expression, it is confession. Face it. God, you showed me what I am. Then focus on God. Why? Because we have to, God is in control of all circumstances. You need to underscore all. God is conscious of all my needs. And God is concerned about all my burdens. Isn't that comforting? How do we get... One of the most comforting attributes of God to me is His sovereignty. He is in control. And what God doesn't cause, God will use for His glory and for others' good. And then the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace. That's our God relationship. Long-suffering, gentleness, goodness. That's our self relationship, or our others relationship. And faithfulness, meekness, and temperance is our self relationship. So all of my relationships are controlled by the Spirit of God. My God relationship, my others relationship, and my self relationship brought under the fruit of the Spirit of God. That's how we reflect His character to this world. Any comments or questions on this? This being Sunday school, I really meant to have a little bit more discussion on this, but anything you want to add to this or any question you might have regarding this? Because, so, yes. Yes. Well, number one, it has to be committed to the Lord. And secondly, there has to be a modeling in my spirit that would not cause that bitterness to increase. When I try to maybe send communiques, I try to send letters of appreciation. I know one of the greatest things that has been a help within families is a handwritten note from a loved one to a loved one, and a note of gratitude. And that note of gratitude would have been there. I thank God for you for, and name the things, what you taught in character. Oftentimes, when a child gets saved and the parents brought them up a certain way, the parents take that as absolute rejection. And I know when I became a Christian, I was living with my brother and his sister when I was climbing for a company down in Lower Michigan. And they were in another church, and I wrote them, my brother and I had a great time, but there was a wall that'd be very hard to define. And I wrote a letter of gratitude, thanksgiving. So we started doing that as a regular Thanksgiving practice. We would all write, look over the last year, and we would write letters of gratitude before we ate any Thanksgiving dinner for people that had been a blessing to us within that last year. Well, I wrote a letter to my brother and sister-in-law and thanking them for the model they'd been to me in helping and strengthening me and during the times and letting me live with them and so on. And it was like the next time I saw her particular, it was like a big hug, and that relationship over these years have grown more and more and more. And I have often time where I express a right spirit, I express gratitude, and then thirdly humble myself and say, you know, what have I done? What have I contributed to this? And normally you will see something along that line. But you really can't think for somebody else, and you can't let somebody else's problem become yours, or you will end up paying their emotional bills. And they'll put their problems on your charge card, and you'll end up paying the emotional bills. So you have to be willing to transfer that over. But when somebody else is bitter, they're normally it's an anger at God for some reason. I have to model a consistency in that. So that wasn't the bell ringer, was it? Uh-oh, I'm in trouble, I think. Okay. I'm going to grab a chair, hang on. Maybe I'll hang on to this pulpit. Okay, good question. Any other question on that or comment?
It just seems like there's a lot of people who are really angry at God. And from like that guy you mentioned. And what do you do in witnessing to the person that's lost and really angry at God?
A good question. What, interestingly enough, when Bill, after that session, I preached my last session, he followed me out to my cabin, and he bear hugged me, lifted me right off the ground. I said, Bill, I love you, and God did. He said, I know. He said, here's my email. He's not saved yet, but he gave me his email on the bottom of this. And so been emailing back and forth. But I think the fact that there was love shown and consistency shown. And you know what helps sometimes is for us to share our own failures sometimes and think, well, they're not perfect. Because you get around some people in life, I mean, you know that God raptured them and let them come back if they promised never to tell where they'd been. And all you can do is sense an aura, and I always go kind of like the Shekinah. And if people get that impression of me, and I never have a flaw, and they think, well, yeah, it's perfect versus holy versus sin. And then they automatically feel condemned until I say, no. We were all born a mess. And the only way we can get out of the mess is the finished work of Christ. But people are angry at God, and then they need to see. I've told some, I said, don't reject, Bill, the only answer to the agony that you wrote on here. I said, do you realize there's only one person who has ever experienced this and everything, every pain? I said, that's Christ. I said, you're kicking him out, and he's the only one who understands what you're saying. So there was a tenderizing there. But I think the individual care was communicated more than anything else. And then he even had enough sweetness to put that he was a Boston Bruins fan because he knew I played hockey for many years. And then after all of this, And he said, by the way, I was playing hockey at 5 years old, Gold Bruins. And so there was a tenderizing that had taken place there. And from this to this. Because I think at first, if I had gotten close enough at first, he would have probably taken a swing at me. And but that does make a difference. Any other question? Where did that second ding-a-ling go? Okay, not quite yet. Anything else to this? This is one of those kind of aspect of a life of a man we don't often delve into. But yet it's there.